Hi again, Medical Education Podcast listeners. This is Kevin Eva, the editor-in-chief of the journal, coming to you today from a glorious late winter day in Vancouver. The sun is shining, and I have the great opportunity to speak with Ahmed Rashid, who is a primary care physician and senior clinical teaching fellow at University College London Medical School. Ahmed and his colleagues have a paper coming out in the July 2018 issue of Medical Education entitled "What Advice is Given to Newly Qualified Doctors on Twitter? An Analysis of Hashtag Tips for New Docs." Ahmed, I understand you've just gotten over a bit of an illness, so I thank you greatly for taking the time to chat with me.
Not at all, Kevin. Thank you very much for having me.
It's my pleasure, in large part because this paper struck me as having a many different levels that we might talk about. It speaks to what it means to professionally socialize physicians. It's a very novel methodology, and really at the heart of it is a deep look at new technologies and how social media is influencing our culture and practice. So we never have enough time to get into all the details or the depth that we might like to with these podcasts, but it's going to be particularly challenging in this moment. So maybe I can just jump right in and ask you about your personal background and relationship with social media, and what was it about Twitter that made this topic of interest for you?
Sure. So as you said in the introduction, I'm a primary care physician and a medical educator at University College London. I've personally been a Twitter user for about 3 or 4 years now, and actually found myself quite quickly getting submerged into the medical community in Twitter, and finding that it was really interesting to see how those networks were formed, what kind of interactions were happening, and particularly the interactions between different generations and between teachers and students. I guess that was quite an informal interest, and I think that's probably the way this paper came about, which is discussing with my colleagues and my co-authors on the paper the kind of things that we were seeing and trying to make sense of what we were seeing. And then I guess taking a look at the literature and seeing that there was some movement into this area, but that there wasn't anyone looking at this in a systematic way. And I think, as you said about the methodology, I think there hasn't been much work to look at how we can really analyze social media in a rigorous way. So I guess we kind of tried to make something up that it would enable us to kind of make sense of some of those things that we were seeing.
Most people I know have a bit of a love-hate relationship, at least those who are on Twitter, and then many who are off of it. The emotions tend to skew a different direction entirely. For those who aren't familiar with the technology, hashtags are obviously a big part of it, and you've used one to create your database for this particular analysis. Can you, in 140 characters or less, explain to anybody who might not use Twitter how messages link together?
Sure. So on Twitter, you send out what they call microblogs, so very short messages, which were up to 140 characters, but quite controversially recently, Twitter has actually changed that to 280 characters. And that happened quite recently. So that happened after we did the searches for this paper. But nonetheless, the format is to send out these very short messages or posts that all your followers will see on their timelines. And if you include a hashtag, so if you include a word or a phrase that doesn't have any gaps in it, that starts with the hashtag symbol, then that allows other users to search that across the whole of Twitter and to see all the posts, all the tweets, as they're called, that are being posted using that hashtag. So it allows you to kind of link together a conversation.
And as the title suggests, you've used hashtag tips for new docs as a way of trying to identify tweets that were relevant to the particular analysis you wanted to do. What was the history of that hashtag, or why did it seem like a useful resource?
Yeah, so I mean, I think in medical education there have been other hashtags. So there was hashtag MedEd is a widely used hashtag, and I think that's used in a really diverse way. So sometimes it's used by medical educationalists to highlight topics or papers or blogs of interest in the world of medical education, but equally it's also used to say that there's something that's of educational interest to doctors. So I think it's used in quite different ways. And the other quite widely used one is hashtag FOAMed, so free open access medical education. So that is used in a slightly more specific way of saying here is some kind of free educational material for doctors. But I think what interested us with tips for new docs is it kind of is a very, very specific use in that it really is giving very particular advice about the first period of time in which you're working as a doctor. And actually, that's something that we can all relate to, that fear that you have on the first day of starting a job. For most people, it'll be the first time having a job full stop, particularly in the UK, because medical education is at an undergraduate level, so most people won't have had a job before that. And the first day of being a doctor is a difficult and often a terrifying experience for doctors. So it's a very particular subset of advice, and it's advice that's often given in a really informal way. And I think what really fascinated us was the fact that it would usually be your quite close network of friends, peers, your teachers and others that you know who are already in the medical profession who would be giving you this advice. And the idea that you could now get this advice from anyone across the world is really quite interesting and opens up lots of potential implications educationally.
Yeah, and as you alluded to, I'm sure everybody listening to this will recognize the stresses and pressures that come from transitioning into a new role, especially when you're taking on the responsibility that a new physician would take on. Most commonly, I would anticipate that when something like this came up on Twitter, it would be more of a satirical look at the start of a physician's lifespan. This sounds like it's been quite genuine, though, and I wonder if you have any insights worth sharing as to how this became such a valuable resource for the community.
So, yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting point that you make, because I think there probably was some of those kind of satirical tweets, and there was an element of that. But what we found when we looked at them in that kind of more systematic way is actually there's a really diverse group of things that are going on here. So it's being used in lots of different ways by different people. And some of it was being used to kind of poke fun at stuff. And some of it was being done probably in a way, kind of showmanship, because people know that people that are in their network or people that are following them will find it funny or will relate to certain anecdotes or certain experiences. But actually there was some quite sincere and quite practical advice that was in there too. So it's a really diverse picture that we found. And I think the fact that people using social media, and particularly Twitter, often form these networks, and they realize that there are lots of different uses that people have, and there are lots of different relationships that you have with the different people that you're following. And I think also there probably is an element of people remembering, because we found that most of the people that were posting were junior doctors or senior doctors themselves, that they could probably remember those experiences that they had themselves. And that, I think, is probably why there was that more sincere advice, that people genuinely wanted to put people at ease and welcome people to the kind of community of physicians, if you like.
Well, and that leads me away from the technology itself. It's easy to get hung up on the fascination with how social media works, but when you start looking at that advice, there are some very real messages about what advice did people feel the need to convey, and what sort of influence might that advice have on furthering the culture of medicine. And skipping over some of the methodological details, what did you learn from the thematic analysis that you did about what it means to become a physician?
Yeah, so I think it probably showed that there are lots and lots of different things that you need to become a physician. Because even in the advice that we're seeing online, some people are taking theories and concepts. So they're talking about approaches like person-centered care and how you should be with your patients and thinking kind of through that lens. Whereas other people are talking about the more personal values. So what you should actually do when you get stuck, what kind of support network you need around you, and how you should remember what it was that made you want to be a doctor and not to get lost in the grind of actually having a job. And then actually some quite logistic things, so how you do a particular clinical skill or how do you document in the notes, and all the way to very intimate knowledge of how a system runs. So because we found that lots of the tweets were from the UK, there was quite a lot about how to refer to a specialist in another department. And that's one of the most difficult tasks junior doctors have in the UK, is they often are the person on the team that has to negotiate with senior specialists in other departments to either get a review or to get a scan or to get some input with the patient under their care. That's quite a difficult thing to do. It's quite a complex task. And yet people are trying to capture how to do that in 140 characters. So there's just a whole raft of different types of information that are being shared. And I think the other thing which kind of runs in parallel with that is, what kind of person is it okay to be as a doctor? So what kind of things, for example, can you laugh at? So there's lots of humor that comes through in lots of these tweets, and often it's being funny, but it's also quite dark humor often. So it's laughing at things like misfortune and often death. And I think part of being a new person to a profession is knowing those rules about what can you laugh at, mm-hmm. how do you fit in. So I think we kind of just laid out all of those different things in this paper, and I think in a way, because this is something that hasn't really been done before, I think we've just kind of did the groundwork, I think, in this paper, and I think there's room for lots more work in this area to kind of unpick all of those areas individually.
Let me come back to that issue of what might be done next in a moment, but as you're speaking, I was just reflecting on a lot of these things, you know, as someone who has gone through this transition yourself and who currently does quite a bit of clinical teaching, a lot of these things must come up in other forms, you know, or more traditional interactions. Is the collection of advice you're seeing on Twitter, do you think, just capturing of what docs would typically hear in a more systematic way, or is it adding something new and different relative to the sorts of transition advice that people would have normally gotten?
Sure. So I think that's really the crux of this paper, the question that you asked about, where the difference is between what we're seeing here. And I think there is a difference. And I think the difference really is the preparation for practice. So it's how ready you are on day one. And I think obviously around the world, we're seeing an emphasis on competence as a really important concept in medical education and being ready to practice as a junior doctor on the first day that you leave medical school. And I think what we've shown here is that there are bits of information which are still not being covered, particularly when I'm talking about the intimate knowledge of how the system operates. So in our paper, we found things like, what kind of items do you need to carry? How do you organize yourself to actually function on a ward? How do you go about making a referral when there's a difficult person on the other end of the line who's not willing to listen to what you need? So I think there are some things that came up. So for example, the more theoretical and conceptual ideas like person-centered care and that sort of thing, which I think are certainly a big part of our curriculum and I think are covered well. But I think it's that preparation for practice and that real readiness to function on your first day where we're still lacking. And I think a particularly important part of that in the UK is the loss of the doctor's mess. So in the UK, doctor's mess used to be an important part of the hospital where all doctors would come together and you'd often exchange ideas, and it would be kind of intergenerational support in the sense that the more senior doctors would give advice to the juniors. And in lots of hospitals in the UK, there just isn't a doctor's mess anymore, or they've become very, very small, or often they're just not functional at all. What I kind of see is that lots of the conversations or the lots of the sharing of ideas that I used to hear in the doctor's mess myself as a medical student and a junior doctor are now actually being shared through social media potentially. So I think there are lots of different layers to that, but I think the short answer is yes, that there are differences between the ideas or the topics that we're seeing here versus the topics that are being taught.
And I couldn't agree more. This seems like the tip of the iceberg in that it is a very unique and novel way of looking at some of these issues. And it's going to undoubtedly yield a large number of efforts to use this sort of data to better understand some of these issues. So as my last question, let me just ask, what's next for you? Where do you think it's most important to take this work as you move your own scholarly interests forward?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that there are lots of different avenues. I think one thing that's really interested us with this work that we'd like to look at more is the kind of profile of the users from both sides. So I think if we think of the Tips for New Docs as having users who are looking at it as potentially final year medical students who are thinking about that first day, and or potentially even medical students from earlier years who are thinking about that readiness to be doctors on day one. And I think the other thing is the profile of the educators, so the people that are actually doing this posting. And as I said, there's themes like humor and camaraderie and sitting in are really interesting. So these doctors who are posting this advice, what are they saying about themselves? And why are they sharing things in a particular way? And I think the other thing that we haven't been able to do in this paper, which would be interesting to do, is to track the posts that one individual Twitter user has done over a period of time. So is all the humorous posts coming from particular people? And if so, then why are those people taking that approach? And is that something that they do generally, or is that just something that they do here? And what is their kind of online persona? And is that their real life persona, or is that a persona that they've created, if you see what I mean? So I think there's lots of interesting avenues to look at in terms of profiling the reasons why people behave in the ways they do. And I think the other thing leading on from that is looking at dialogue. So in this paper, what we really did is to look at individual posts that were sent out with this hashtag. And what we weren't able to look at is whether they actually led on to some replies and whether they generated any proper dialogue between people. And I think a particular area of interest there is patients, because although most of the tweets were sent by senior and junior doctors, a significant proportion were also sent by patients. And clearly that's very interesting to think that patients may be directly providing advice to new doctors. And I guess that opens up a whole avenue of how patients and students and doctors interact online, and whether we can learn from patients through social media in other ways.
It's going to be a fascinating path, so I'll wish you well with it. And we'll just close by reminding our listeners that I've been speaking with Ahmad Rashid about a paper that will be in the July 2018 issue of Medical Education called "What Advice is Given to Newly Qualified Doctors on Twitter? An Analysis of Hashtag Tips for New Docs." With the online early publication, I'm sure you'll find it via the hashtag even sooner than you would find it in that issue, though. So keep an eye out, and thank you, Ahmed, for taking the time to speak.
Not at all. Thank you very much for having me.